Hey, welcome to the Nerdist Podcast. Okay, quick announcements. If you head over to youtube.com/Nerdist, the Nerdist channel on YouTube, you will see we are sneak previewing just a snippet of our new show, The Realm of LARP, a live-action role-playing reality series, which celebrates the concept of LARP. So go over there now. Super fun show. youtube.com/Nerdist. Hey guys, you know it's a couple weeks away, San Diego Comic-Con, and the Nerdist Podcast live at the Balboa Theater. If you go to nerdist.com/calendar, you can get tickets for that. Also, Course of the Force, July 7th through July 11th, our lightsaber relay run all the way down the California coast. We're going to be having sort of events and parties every night, and then on the 11th, the Dan Band is going to be playing in San Diego at the Balboa Theater as well. So, go to courseoftheforce.com for info on that. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup, because you're probably really excited to have all your files disappear if your computer crashes. If you get a nice blue screen, if you're PC-based, or if your Mac just eats itself, just folds in half and eats itself, you really need to make sure that all your files are packed up, because you want to murder someone, and you shouldn't murder people. So go to Carbonite.com. You'll have all your files backed up whenever you need them from any computer, and then a computer disaster is really just a hardware failure, and you're not going to lose all your files. Your better backup plan for home and your business is Carbonite. Plans start at just $59 a year. Start your free trial today at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Nerdist. You're going to get 2 bonus months with your purchase. That is Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Nerdist. This episode is Jorge Garcia, who you may know as Hurley from Lost, and who I now know as an awesomely cool guy. Matt Myra met him at E3, and it turns out he listens to the fucking podcast. Like, he may actually have been listening to this episode anyway, even if he weren't on it. So it's always fun to meet people. You're like, hey, I like your work. And they're like, hey, I know your work. And that freaks me out. I don't know why, but it always, in a good way, it freaks me out. So we were super excited to have him on, and just a really terrific guy. So here it is, Nerdist Podcast episode number 220 with Jorge Garcia.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Because so many people in our crew had like nicknames like Bunny and
Scratch. My aunt's name was Bunny.
Walrus.
That's kind of like the generation right before. Because my dad's brother was like none of them had real names. It was like Auntie Bunny, Uncle Bucky.
Yeah.
No, that was none of their names.
Is that a Portuguese thing or a Hawaiian
just
thing?
A Hawaiian thing. Like, and it's always like something boy, like Chemo Boy.
Oh really?
Yeah. Girl boy. Yeah.
That's girl. That's fascinating, Jonah. Ooh. So everyone on the tiny island of Hawaii has some sort of a nickname.
Yeah.
If you went to high school there, yeah, you earned a nickname at some point. I had a buddy of mine who's he's out here, Andy Trask, who grew up in Kailua.
Really?
They called him Billy Idol because he was like one of the only blonde kids. He had like blonde spiky hair. And so
we're recording right now. That's all right. What was your nickname, Jonah?
It was Breadmouth.
It was what?
It was a joke that I made that like people made me commit to. Where it's like it was a joke in high school where I was like, oh, I'm gonna be the guy that's always like chewing on some bread and was gonna be calling me Breadmouth. And then my friends were like, oh, we're gonna start calling you Bread. I was like, no, it's just a joke. And then they started calling me it, and then everyone in high school started calling me it.
When
and then,
a joke like, backfires.
Yeah, see? Exactly. It's like when you cross your eyes.
You gotta be careful when you pick your own nickname.
Yeah.
Jorge Garcia is here with Matt and Breadmouth. we're bringing it back.
It's fine. And then it became my tag name.
Is that like your gamer tag?
Gamer tag. Yeah. You gotta do like a Yuck Mouth parody. They call me Breadmouth
because I eat bread. But I don't brush too.
When I started like doing graffito tags,
that was like a reverse dad comment. Was it like a gamer tag?
What is that?
Went too far into the future.
What is that? A gaming tag?
Hold it back.
Is that some kind of gaming tag? It's a gaming tag. God, fuck. I just don't know how to use words. I'm sorry.
You want headphones?
I don't know. Should I?
If you want.
It feels so much more official.
It does.
It is pretty official. And then you can hear.
I never know what I sound like.
Can you hear every breath? Oh, you mean you don't listen to the podcast all the time, Matt?
Matt, do you want
Should we be? Is that a thing we should be doing?
You want...
Yeah, I'll take tiny headphones.
Okay.
Thanks, man.
Hold me closer, tiny headphones.
I was just about to sing that, and then you beat me to it because you decided to just say it.
I just said it.
I'm not going to use I'm not going to use the Kobe headphones, though.
Oh, well, that's good information for the listeners.
Listen, Kobe, come on.
You're going to use the Bowers and Wilkinsons.
That's right.
Actually, that's Kobe's that's Wilkins. Their like catchphrase. Kobe, come on.
Kobe, you're in an airport. Come on. Yeah.
What are you,
you forgot your headphones.
What are you going to use? Your shitty ones on a plane?
Vending machine headphones.
Kobe. Kobe. News.
One time I got a...
Come on, you don't need that $9.
I got a... I forgot headphones. I went to the Best Buy vending machine, and then two headphones came out when I bought one.
Sweet.
So great. You called the company to give them back, right?
Oh, I did it.
You are untrustworthy, breadmouth.
Hey, imagine what I'm going to do when the pizza vending machines start coming to America.
Oh, that sounds great.
You hear about that?
I saw something on it.
Pizza vending machines coming to the States.
Thanks, Japan.
Yep.
Jorge Garcia, thank you so much for coming on the show.
We're just thanking Japan for pizza.
You know, when I was in Madrid, they had a gold vending machine.
I saw one of those.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous looking. It's like, oh yeah, I want a little bar gold. it's like and you look at the locations, it's like there's like the one in Madrid, there's like a couple in Germany, and like everywhere else it's like Saudi Arabia and like Emirates.
I'll be right back. I just need to go get some bouillon. Does anyone want bouillon cubes? Anyone want gold bouillon?
Well, shaking it. Trying to put your hand up it for more gold.
Well, now they just reported on Attack of the Show, and then Argentina. They discovered there was a crossover between fans of beer and fans of rugby. So they have these vending machines.
Attack of the Show broke this
Never.
News.
Yeah.
So they made these vending machines that in order to dispense the beer, you have to body slam it.
Wow.
And there's like a meter on it that tells you how hard you slam it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wouldn't the shaking of it, though, make the beer all fizzy and then explode when you open it?
I would think there would be...
Do you think they care?
I would think there would be more vending machine-related deaths than... Whether or not the beer is going to be fizzy.
It'd be like in Breaking Bad, and just fall on top of them.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just another way to expand the rugby crushing depth.
We need more crushing.
It's enough that they knock the fence down and stampeded people. Now the beer machine is killing them.
We were concerned that too many of the deaths were happening on the field, so we really wanted to take it into...
Yeah, the private sector.
Yeah.
Oh, have you been to Argentina?
I have. When I was really little, I remember buying... You know, it's like... The thing I remember about... I went to Bariloche. We took the train there from Chile. My dad was from Chile.
Okay.
And so we took the train from Chile to Argentina. And two things I remember. One was when you flushed the toilet on the train, it just kind of flapped open and you saw the track.
Whoa.
That's awesome.
And they had... You know those... They're like whippersnapper, firecracker things. It's like the little rock wrapped in piece of paper. You throw it and it snaps. They had those, but they were really nice looking. They look like little styrofoam gumdrops. Like they were just like, it's like, wow, they really kind of clapped
They're so
it up.
Far ahead
it
wasn't of us like that with pop and snap technology.
Yeah, exactly. It was really, really awesome.
And those are the two things you took.
And that is it.
Well, that landscape is beautiful.
I was 11.
In Argentina, you dropped my priorities shit on the track. Were there.
It's I think because Mexico is so close, I think a lot of people think, oh, South America's not that far away. But it's like 20 hours or something to get to Argentina.
Yeah, it was because it was two legs. Like one was just to fly to Florida and then the next was connecting there. I remember being on the plane forever.
Yeah, that's a long flight, huh?
That was before iPods and smartphones. What did we do to occupy our time as kids?
Crosswords.
A lot of coloring.
Yeah.
I remember that those long trips we'd take. My parents drove cross country all the time. It was just, that's what it was. Stock up on coloring books and Mad Libs. Yeah. Anyone, give me an adjective.
Nothing kills a room like Mad Libs.
Like, how many times can you write fart down?
I need an adjective. Farting.
Stinky.
Yeah. Did you grow up in, what part of the country did you grow up in?
South Orange County, San Juan Capistrano, San Clemente, down there.
San Juan Capistrano is really nice.
It is. It's interesting. Every time like you drive down now, they're leveling off another side of their freeway and putting a whole nother, Best Buy or just big giant box stores are just popping up all over the place. But it was a nice place to grow up in for sure.
And what's your background? Did you study acting or comedy or anything in school?
No, I went to UCLA. I did. You did?
Yeah. When? I was there.
Guys, you can be proud of it. You can speak up.
Just between us.
Just between me. I was there 89 to 92.
The 80s, you were in college. That's so old.
Hang on a sec. Matt, I have a dick for you. I'm going to want you to suck on it. Mm-hmm. Like 89 to 93, I was there.
Right, I was there 92 to 95, so.
Sweet.
But
you're going back there soon.
I'm. They actually asked if I'd speak at the comm studies graduation thing.
That's awesome.
Sunday. Yeah, it's awesome and nerve wracking at the same time for me right now.
Did you take was comm your major?
Yeah, that's the major I was in.
Do you remember? Did you have a professor named Jeff Cole?
I did.
That's awesome.
That.
Jeff Cole was like the trench coat wearing professor that all the kids loved, and he kind of spoke our language and just sort of cut through the shit. Everyone loved Jeff Cole.
Captain, yeah. My captain.
Yeah, he was like your first college professor that you had that those feelings about. It's like, changing the world and new ideas.
Oh man,
not taking crap.
What do they teach you in the upper division communication studies major? Because I always thought it might be a fun major, but I just never knew what the...
You learn stuff like, you know, the effect of violent TV on children.
There's none,
and,
right?
And, you know, different... You know, it's all like, you know, it's all based off, you know, parenting helps. Parenting's good. So it's like there's one time where Jim Carrey made some comments. You know, maybe if we just kind of hug our children a little closer. like certain things about like different communication law and, you know, I don't know, it was a lot of different things.
It just always sounded like one of those majors, like, oh, that'd be really fun. What is, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
I ended up in the philosophy department.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, but it's like, but the classes are like, you know, your classes about movies, classes about television, because, oh, there's a little interpersonal communication stuff in there too. Ah, maybe that's useful. And, you know, just kind of, you know, those kind of things. It's about like publishing and journalism and stuff. So I was like, yeah, these are kind of things I wouldn't mind dabbling in for a little while. And that's just kind of where I went to.
Now, basically, I think the internet has killed the comm major because you could learn all those things just on Google.
I think I killed the comm major.
Why?
I never finished it.
Oh, was that your major?
Yeah. Well, it started as communications and then it went turned into digital media production.
Yeah.
And then I left. I got kicked out.
Let's okay, those
got,
are
wait,
two different.
Out?
And they said, that's it. We're retiring the major.
Major is no
if
longer.
If we were wrong. We were
if
wrong.
Matthew Myra can't succeed at this major, nobody will.
Did they hang your jersey up in front of the comm building?
I'd have to go
burned
back
it
to see.
In an effigy.
Yeah, that was fun, I guess. College.
I took a communication arts class in high school.
We didn't have that at my high school. We had a lot of theology classes that you had to take.
It was taught by a Mormon married couple.
Wait, the couple taught the class?
Yeah. It was really weird. And like they would talk about how, like, you know, film is like, you know, these movies are great, these movies are great. Yeah, so what about The Godfather? They're like, oh no, it's a horrible movie. We've never seen it. Because they can't see it.
I like the follow up, it's a horrible movie. We've never seen it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, how can you say it's, you know, it's not a good movie? It's like one of the best, you know, classics of all time. It's regarded as such. And they're like, because they're Mormon. They
what
can't.
Kind of movies could they watch?
We watch. You know, I'll give it to them.
Milo and Otis.
Yeah, it was a lot of, you know, a lot of old John Huston movies. Like I'll give it to them for that. Like I did get to see a lot of movies I probably wouldn't have come across anyway, like Treasure of Sierra Madre,
right.
And African Queen, and
but not like Angel Heart.
Yeah. They did show me though one of my, like, it's still one of my favorite movies, Breaking Away. I hadn't seen it before, and they showed it in the class, and
Townies.
Still one of my favorite ones.
Fucking Townies.
Yeah.
How did you get from the comm major? Was acting a thing you were pursuing?
Well, I would do things in high school, and I did one play at UCLA. Kind of going, getting a college education was like a appease my parents with the backup plan system. Mm-hmm. And then after I graduated, I went to, I got a job at Borders in Westwood.
Yes.
Oh. Just so I wouldn't move back home, because I thought it was really easy to get comfortable once you got, if you did that. And
now this Borders, what did they sell?
They were a bookstore, bookstore and cafe.
Okay. I know that word.
they did all those things, and for a little stint,
they had their time,
and they're hanging out with actors who were also working there. It's kind of what really made me go, I should probably just get back into trying to do this thing, and I joined an acting class at the Beverly Hills Playhouse, and it kind of went from there.
Do you think those acting classes help?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the BHP, I feel I owe my career to, definitely. If one thing, it's just great having a place to be a part of a community. Because, you know, it's this whole idea of like, you know, LA is basically the Wild West still. You know, it's like a lot of cantinas, a lot of people out here trying to seek their fortune. Only instead of gold, it's like whatever. And
gold
and so
machines.
It's good having a supportive group of people to be around to kind of get, you know, trudge through the muck.
So it's like to struggle with.
Yeah. And so that was cool. And also because it was a place to produce things and feel like you're being creative and, you know, putting stuff up when the real world out there isn't, you know, paying you to do that stuff yet.
Yeah.
It's hard. I always feel bad for people who are actors because for stand-ups, we could, you know, essentially get up and do our thing every night if we wanted to, and it's very easy for us and it doesn't rely on a production or really other people.
Right.
And so, you know, for actors, you're like, oh, I just want to act. I just want to do this. And you, it's very difficult to just go do that.
Yeah. First of all, you need at least one other guy. And then, you know, people have to be there to see it. And there's definitely a lot more, production that you have to like deal with as opposed to being able to show up to do like stand-up comedy because you don't even necessarily need a mic to, you know, get up and entertain people that way.
No, well, even at Borders used to have a comedy show, actually. Like up, and I think the first couple of shows
you'd get paid in gift certificates.
Yeah, you would get paid in gift certificates.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure if there was a mic. It might have been a shitty one, but I think like for the first show I did there, there wasn't really a mic. It was just like standing in the corner in that round part,
kind of
shouting jokes at people as they were, you know, sifting through.
Yeah, I did that. I even got earned a couple gift certificates doing stand up there. It was great because I was still on the clock, so it was kind of like getting paid double.
That's pretty sweet.
Period of time.
What was your? So you almost became. You were almost at stand up, or you just did it to fuck
around? Well, I dabbled in it. Like I did a few, like when Pedersen's
had
their
of course.
Open mic, I'd go over there and do stuff or wait all day outside the Laugh Factory to do 3 minutes. You know, I did a little bit, but I didn't feel that I had the discipline to. Well, I saw people go up and do the same 6 minutes every time they went up on stage to keep honing and working that same bit of material. And I was kept inviting my same friends to all these like bringer shows, so I always wanted to do something different every time. And so I didn't feel like I had, you know, the discipline to really kind of, craft the joke.
Yeah. Well, the stand-up gene, I think, is pretty specific. If you have it, then you'll just keep doing it no matter what. Then you almost don't have a choice. And if you don't, then it's like, this is fucking tedious and largely unrewarding for many years. But at least with acting, you could, I don't know. I mean, your stand-up is a long path, but with acting, it can be like winning the lottery, like just like that. Oh, last week I was washing dishes. This week on a show.
Yeah, it was like I remember. Like I quit Borders on April Fool's Day, which was pretty awesome.
No, I'm really leaving.
Yeah, yeah. He got paid for another 2 weeks. After got, that.
when I booked my first pilot, and it was just, and then it turns out I quit a little early because they were still hadn't found their lead for this pilot I was in. So then all of a sudden I was like going, oh man, my money's running out real fast. And I, you know, and we better start shooting this thing or else, you know, I need to start getting some, you know, some of the job again. But
what was the pilot?
Oh, it was called, originally it was called Old School, but then there was this movie called Old School. So they changed it to The Originals.
And then there was a band from up at Brighton that was called The Originals, so we changed our name to The New Originals.
And then they just came.
Okay. It was for UPN back when UPN still existed.
I did a show on UPN. I remember the up-and-coming network,
as I used to call it.
No, the United Paramount Network. Mm-hmm.
It had Judah Friedlander was in it.
Oh, Judah's great. That's awesome.
Dan Marino was in it. John Krasinski was in it.
Wow.
Natasha Lyonne was in it. I mean, it was...
It's stacked. Stacked show.
UPN was an interesting network because they launched this, you know, like they said, we really want to be a network. So they launched this 5-night-a-week primetime programming lineup, and within 6 months had pretty much abandoned all of it.
Yeah.
Like they didn't... They were like, okay, that didn't work. You're like, yeah, because it takes time to get people to know that you have a channel.
They kept Voyager on for 7 years.
They kept Voyager on for a while. Malcolm and Eddie was like their big comedy hit.
Oh, yeah, I remember Malcolm and Eddie.
Remember Malcolm and Eddie, how that was on forever?
It was Malcolm Jamal Warner.
It was Malcolm Jamal Warner and Eddie Griffin.
Yeah, wow.
Remember Shasta? The Shasta McNasty?
Shasta McNasty,
Shasta McNasty?
Shasta.
Who was the guy?
Shasta.
Was it Michael Rapaport?
Shasta Cola?
Shasta. Oh, Shasta.
Who was it?
Wasn't Michael Rapaport, wasn't
it? No, wasn't it Busey's kid?
Yeah, it was Busey's kid.
Oh, okay, Jake Busey.
Busey's kid.
It's a charity for it's a weird, Gary Busey.
It's a weird sequel to Bebe's Kids.
No, Busey's Kids. Any kid who's come near.
We don't die, we multiply.
How many pilots were you one of those guys who was able to get a pilot every season and then it just wouldn't go and just wouldn't go and then finally
No, I got that one pilot. I mean, this is for a lot of pilots I tested, but I didn't get, like, it's kind of like right out of the gate, I went on 2 pilot auditions and tested for one of them. And I was like going, wow, this is gonna work out for me real nice. And then, like, there's a huge dead space where no pilots click. And so that pilot didn't get picked up, but people... who, when Becker was going to be coming back, they were looking for a new character to add to the show, and they watched all the pilots that shot at Paramount, including that one where they saw me, and then I ended up getting a job on Becker, which lasted 13 episodes till that show got canceled. And a few months after that, Lost happened, and then, you know, everything's kind of worked out since.
It's so seductive when you like you book a pilot, and if you're a young actor, you haven't really worked that much before, and you're like, I booked a show, and they're going to pay me $20,000 for a week of work.
Yeah.
But you don't do the math in your head where you go, wait, I'm not allowed to do anything else for like a year, so that's like 20 grand for the year, but then I have to pay commissions on that, but then the government thinks I make that much every week, so they keep a lot of it. So really, I made like 9 grand for the year.
Yeah.
For the entire year.
I had to coast on that for a while. Like I was coasting on that money, and then it got to about August when I ran out of money and I was gonna have to borrow rent money from my parents. And the same time I got the check, I also got a residual check for like a Keystone Light commercial that I had done at the beginning of the year,
nice.
Which is so great when sometimes the magic happens and then like the right check comes at the right time. And so I was able to send that check back to my parents. And then that August is when, you know, everything kind of exploded for me because I also got a Showtime movie that was called Good Humor Man. That had Kelsey Grammer in it, and it was directed by the guy who gave me my first commercial job, and then the part on Becker that turned into a series regular for 13 episodes.
I think that's another good lesson for people is that first of all, it's important to always be nice and be fun and easy to work with because everyone goes off and works on other stuff immediately, and I feel like a lot of jobs that you end up getting in this business have pretty much... very little to do with, oh, I just got this cold audition. It's like, oh, I worked with this guy, and then he called me in for this. And it really is, you're kind of building relationships every time you work.
Yeah, I think, you know, my bigger jobs have been jobs that I've gotten from other jobs. Like, JJ called me in for Lost, basically, because he saw my Kirby Enthusiasm. And that Kirby Enthusiasm, I actually went in for the audition the day I was taping that pilot, because... the two casting directors kind of like talk to each other a lot and would like share actors and information. And there's nothing cooler than like going to an audition when they have to rush you in because you got to go do another job.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like when you have an audition on the day you get a paycheck. It's like you just kind of go in with a whole new air of confidence.
and then other times it's just figuring out how to harness and fake that confidence for the times you don't have another job to
right.
go yeah. to.
Right.
What's your specific, you know, are you super off book guy in the audition, or do you like work off the page, or do you make your character decisions? Do you improvise more?
I definitely always hold the paper. I mean, that's kind of something that I was always taught to at least have the paper in your hand. But I like to know it really well. But I don't have to know everything. I think so much of it is. When I've sat sometimes on the other side and seen a lot of people come in to audition for a part, and I was like, yeah, they all are fine. They all can do this part. And then the one person walks in that you just go, oh, okay, so that's how this part goes.
Right.
Oh, wow.
And there's definitely a feeling that, you know, there'd be parts that I'm right for, and yes, those parts will be mine pretty easily. And the other ones, it's like, yeah, I'll show them what I do, you know, because the only thing you have, suddenly my mind goes faster than my mouth, and it just kind of starts turning into a stutter. But it's really the only thing that you have control over is kicking ass in the room, and then beyond that, you just gotta let it go. And if they call, great. If not,
are you a pretty comfortable guy in general, or are you, or do you have performer anxiety brain?
I do. I mean, I get nervous. I learned that the nerves is just that, you know, your talent getting excited because it's going to do something.
Mm-hmm.
and just kind of let that, you know, don't let it do anything that's going to cripple me. It's like, all right, this is it. Cause you know, oh great. I can get to go act somewhere, even if it's in a room across a desk with somebody eating their lunch. I still get to do the thing that I love to do.
Yeah. And with Lost, did you have a sense? Because you work on a lot of pilots. When you work on pilots, they always kind of tell you, like, oh no, this is going to be like the network is really behind this. And most of the time, then you never, like the show goes away, you never hear about it again. But with Lost, was there a sense like, this is a real, I mean, that fucking pilot was insane. The first few minutes of that show, I think you're like, oh, this is like a movie. So did you get that sense when you were shooting it?
Well, Lost was cool because, one, I had the job before I even read the script because they're very secretive about the script. And when I went in, they didn't even have sides for me to read. So they says, you know, here's some sides for a character called Sawyer. You know, it's not necessarily what you're going out for, but just they just kind of want to see what, you know, you do as an actor. So when I read those sides and then chatted with them for a while after that, where they kind of just kind of got the gist of my personality and who I am, then they eventually wrote sides for Hurley for me to go and test with. But working on it, really, I just kind of figured, if anything, I get a trip to Hawaii out of this. So it'll be kind of a fun little, little trip. And when you really saw that we were a show to be excited about was when we were at Upfronts and they bring everybody into this big room, like all the talent from the ABC shows were all in this one big room watching the Upfront presentation via like closed circuit or satellite TV. And so we were just sitting around hanging out with my friends who I just did this pilot with. And we're just, you know, drinking and chatting. And we're like pointing and looking. Oh, look, over there's Jim Belushi. Oh, look. look, Rick Schroeder. And we're just kind of like sitting around going like this. And they see each the new shows coming through and the clips get run. And then they ran our clip and we had a really great trailer that the room kind of went, wow.
Oh, wow.
Thing. And I was like going, well, we might be, you know, this kind of makes us a little bit of the bell of the ball. What's great about the first Upfronts is nobody knows who you are. So you get to go around and like kind of like meet actors and play the role of the people who are there to like take pictures with you and all that kind of stuff as well. Because you don't really have people lining up at your booth because nobody knows
right
who you are. And And then the year after that, then we had a pretty big line. So it was kind of like cool to see that you made an impact.
Wow. Was it exactly what you thought it would be? Like the, you know, whatever sort of mythology you had built up in your head over the years of like, oh, someday I'm going to get on a show and it's going to be successful and it's going to be great. And then did it feel that way, or did you sense that that was happening, or what did you learn?
It's nothing that you can really learn and prepare for. There's like this kind of, like I felt my recognizability go up exponentially.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, there's a time when if I pulled my hair back in a ponytail, I could still be invisible. And then suddenly, even that wasn't going to do anything, going to, you know, Kaneohe Mall and stuff like that.
The Windward Mall.
Yeah. And it was just kind of, discovering that, and kind of discovering, it was like going, oh, you know, there's certain things I go, oh, I didn't think I was going to be videotaped when I went to the beach.
How do you...
But I guess that's part of it now. Okay.
What were you going
to
say,
man? Like, how long did it take you to be like, okay, this is it, and I guess I'll deal with this? And do you hate it?
I hate it. I mean, it's I'm sure hard you hate aspects of not it. To be flattered when all you do is show up and you make someone's day.
Tell me about it.
But it's also hard.
Yeah, tell Matt about it.
Have a fight with your girlfriend at Disneyland. You know, there's like certain things like going,
Yeah, I mean, it's like
you
should stop taking your girlfriend to Disneyland to have fights with her, though. It's a weird place.
Staging fights.
I'm really mad at her. Well, no, can we go down? Can we drive down really quick?
You have to save all the screams for like Space Mountain so it just blends in. Why do you always do this to me? Whatever, Republic.
That was like, yeah.
Yeah, when you're on TV, it probably gets harder to just shake people in public because then the cameras go up.
I mean, I've always been kind of a homebody. It does give me an excuse to be now.
I don't think people really understand, like, is it, you know, in what would really just be a sliver of your life, you're having a bad day, you're having a fight with your girlfriend, and someone comes up and they're like, will you sign my face? And you're just like, I just need a second. And then
sign my face
or whatever, or okay, whatever. And that's not the main part of the story, Matt. And then they go away and they're like, wow, man, that guy was a jerk. But you may have been like crushed inside because of something else that happened.
Well, that's what it's like. I recently had a moment where I saw I was a disappointment to someone who met me.
Oh,
Jesus.
Oh no.
Like, I had a moment with somebody who came up to me. And I was in line at like a valet line, and they were like, oh, hey, yeah, I just saw you do that thing in there. And I was like, oh, thanks, cool. And I'm a shy person. Like, it takes a big effort for me to like put myself out there and be like, hi, how are you? What's your name? And do all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's getting into acting is part of why, you know, because I'm shy, and it kind of gives you a place to let that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I was probably, I don't know, a little short with, like, I didn't really have anything I felt to kind of further the conversation. And I just kind of had this, we hit this moment, and it was like, and she was like, okay, well, you know, it was, you know, nice to meet you. And she turned to walk away, and you could see in the way she looked at me from the side of, you know, I was like going, oh man,
another unsatisfied customer.
She's going to go talk about me.
You should have just committed. And as she walked away, just go and stay out.
Someone thinks I'm a jerk now.
And there's nothing you could. It's just your brain froze in that moment, because when you don't have any...
Because
she has information about you, but you have no information about her, so you don't know what to ask.
Right.
So it's not... So sometimes I fall back on the, how's that thing you're doing? Like, it's a joke. And it just kind of like warms up, and they'll go, oh, that thing's great. And then everything's comfortable. Then now, everything's all right.
Anytime someone hears me say, how's that thing you're doing? They're going to be like, ah, you totally stole that.
I just ran into Chris Hardwick, and he said the same thing.
I don't have a thing, okay?
And the thing's going great, thank you very much.
When we've talked to other Lost folks before on here, you know, Damon Lindelof had been saying that, because people say, well, do you have the whole thing planned out, the whole series planned out? And he's like, well, we have some things planned out, but you have to understand that as you go along, a show is made up of human beings, and sometimes they change or they change their minds. Like, Mr. Echo was going to have this entire storyline, then decided he didn't want to be in Hawaii anymore, so we had to change that storyline. And then, you know, someone from the audience is like, well, oh, really tough living in Hawaii for all that time. They're like, well, yeah, kind of, you know, if you're isolated from your home and you're living on an island, how did you take the experience?
Hawaii?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Hawaii. I miss Hawaii every day. Hawaii is like where I think I'm going to end up. Like I stayed in Hawaii during hiatus. I just decided I was going to make Hawaii home. And I mean, I wasn't in a great apartment anyways, because this was kind of like the first time I started seeing real money. But so Hawaii, I was like going, all right, I'm just going to live here and make this, you know, where I live for these next, you know, however long the thing took me. And it was a good 6 years.
It's a great place. It sounds like kind of crazy, but it's like a special place that there's no other, you know, feeling like it. It's so specific. The people in the place is so specific to it that, like, you know, it's like there's no other place where you can be like, oh, this is nice. It's kind of like being in Hawaii, except unless you're in Hawaii.
Yeah, but in Hawaii, you must be extra special king there, because you sort of represent this really special idea and this show that's, you know, that people love, but it's very Hawaiian in its roots.
He's not Dog the Bounty Hunter.
What? You don't catch people for money?
You don't smell ice in the air?
Patu.
This is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a, they welcomed us being there. They liked that we were a good show that was shooting there, for sure. That was definitely a source of pride for him. And the only cool thing about being in Hawaii to do Lost was you got to forget the level that the show was at, in the sense that this became just a show that me and my friends do out in the jungle, you know, and sometimes we'll get together once a week and we'll watch what we did.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to think about like how big the show was until you then would go and do like a panel at Comic-Con, you know, going, wow, I can't even see the back of that room.
Yeah.
I was like, I guess this is a bigger deal than I realized, you know.
I thought it was, I guess it was on the final, maybe the final episode. I guess it was the final episode when all you guys did Kimmel.
Yeah.
And it was the actor who played Saeed. Very proudly said, I've never watched the show. And everyone was like, there was this weird kind of gasp from the audience, like,
yeah, we made him watch one, actually, at one point.
Is that just a preference for him? Like, he doesn't like watching himself? Or?
Yeah, he's not, I don't think he likes to watch his own stuff.
There's a certain school of acting that, there's a certain thing that a larger than you think number of actors have. Where number one, they kind of get weirded out watching themselves. But number two, they're afraid that if they watch themselves, that they'll get too in their head about their performance, and so they won't do it. But some people just can't stand to watch themselves.
I think like Brad Pitt was saying something like that in an interview recently. Like, he doesn't watch any of his movies, or Johnny Depp, or someone that.
I think I heard Depp say it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's also the same thing. It's like the idea of like, you know, back there was a day when people would go in and watch dailies. And as an actor, I don't know, because you'll start seeing things like going, oh, does my nose always crinkle like that? Oh, man.
It actually crinkled when you said that.
That's not what you want to think about when you're trying to do a scene. You know, or it's like going, oh, why is my hand so weird looking right there?
Yeah. I got to stand up straight.
You know, it's weird. In season three, Hugo's character, his hands, right hand's always in his pocket for some reason. It's always in his pocket. You never, and he crinkled his nose.
Yeah, it's like, man, I need a better t-shirt. that kind of thing. I mean, yeah, I don't, I have kind of the opposite of what Naveen has, where it's like, you know, I'll watch anything and be like, you know, and usually I'm a fan of it. I didn't go to that Jimmy Kimmel night that when they had asked, but it was kind of like, this was like, for me, it was like, man, this is the end of a huge, significant portion of my life. So I just kind of was like, I think I'm just going to watch it at home with my friends instead. You know, and I just kind of watched their thing on TV when it came on.
Do you feel like you appreciated it at the time, or did you have to get the hindsight of like, oh, that really was like one of the best experiences of my life?
Well, it was definitely, it was cool knowing when that your show is ending, as opposed to like when sometimes you'll get, you know, just, you know, you just find out, says, oh, yeah, you guys aren't coming back. And it's like, oh, okay. Anyway, I guess to go back to working on my garden again.
When your garden's looking good, that means the career's not going well.
Yeah. And there was definitely having that final season to be precious about it was really cool. And just kind of getting to have that kind of, you know, your senior year moment. It was like going, man, this is going to be the last time I'm going to be shooting. Oh, hey,
a lot of memories in these
halls.
That's
crazy.
A lot of memories in these trees. A lot of memories in this hatch.
And so that was cooler, and getting the last script delivered, like everything was kind of feeling like this is a moment. But probably the biggest one was the moving back to the mainland. It was probably the biggest significant kind of thing about it. And then just kind of like the fall lineup.
Yeah.
No.
And new shows coming out. And
time moved on.
I don't see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, flash forward. This is an interesting idea for a show. How did they come up with that one?
That started a year before it ended, right?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Although, that stuff I was happy about. I was like Invasion. I was like, cool, I'll watch it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, if you had, I mean, just because when we came on, there was definitely a struggle to figure out where they were going to put us. I mean, that's why our lead in was The Bachelor, because like it was like there wasn't a way they could build a night around Lost, because there wasn't anything else that kind of matched. And so the fact that it inspired a lot of like kind of cool, weirder kind of shows.
You could have put According to Jim on right before.
Hey, there's Jim Belushi again. And Rick Schroeder.
I would watch a show with the two of them. NYPD Jim, whatever it would have been. I don't know.
According to Rick.
There you go.
According to the champ.
He made himself cry in that last scene, you know. According to Spoons.
That's what I was trying to... That was like a silver sploosh.
So according to Spoons.
They ride a toy train to justice.
Millionaire Kid is also a cop.
Well, I think that's Batman.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you're right. Yeah. No, that's a billionaire kid who's also a detective.
I have a feeling that Mitt Romney is a Batman.
You think so?
Yeah.
He's got the jawline for it. I just want to say Mr. President, in this debate, you will find justice. You're there.
The helicopter.
Since you kind of got a front row seat for this whole experience in these 7 years, did you feel like you pretty much... You seem like you still seem like a nice, sweet, normal guy. Did you? You do. Did anyone else?
Oh, good, I fooled them.
did you kind of notice everyone else? Like, I mean, you don't have to say names, but like, that person's going a little crazy. That person's going a little kooky. Maybe because they're, I don't know, maybe you're trapped on an island, or maybe because they're, you know, getting famous, more famous, or whatever. Or is everyone pretty cool?
Crazy is a
not crazy.
Strong word.
Not crazy, but just sort of like, oh, they're definitely affected by what's happening.
There's this kind of thing when you first move to Hawaii to do a show like this. When you shoot the pilot, you're all in the same hotel, and then when you first move there, you're your only friends. So it was kind of like every weekend at the Fox's house, hanging out by the pool. Or, you know, and the beach and stuff like that. It was, we saw each other outside of work and during work all the time. Also, during that first time, on the show, the group was just hanging out in the same beach the whole time. So there wasn't like a lot of splitting up in excursions, like half the people in the caves and half the people on the beach. Or, you know, some people going to Othersville and other people, you know, going to find the ship. So in a sense, there was, you know, we were around each other and kind of had a pretty strong core at the beginning. But as the show progresses, you know, people have lives and they have kids in school who have stuff on the weekends and stuff. As everyone kind of started like, you know, getting real lives going on there. I mean, that happened a little less, I guess. At work, it was always pretty... easy and smooth, and you know, we still kind of got along with everybody. I'm a guy who gets along with everybody, so there may have been some people who had issues with other people, but it wasn't really something that found its way into my day.
Well, that's good. I think, no matter what happens, I think people kind of come out of it with whatever issues they came in with that might have just been buried in their head. And maybe some of that comes out.
I do think a lot of times, as just actors in general, the people who are dicks were dicks beforehand. and the fame and the money kind of just became a catalyst for them to, you know, be able to do it more.
You're talking about the actress that plays Rose, right? Knew it. I fucking knew it. You can just see it on screen.
Just the seething rage.
And I find that, you know, everywhere. I think it's definitely the people who seem to have staying power are the people who can get along with people.
Yeah.
For sure. I remember when I was on Becker, there was like moments and talking like Ted Danson, who's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. And
yeah.
Just kind of, you know, him talking to the executive producer about how when he was on, finally on Becker, like they got him at his good years. You know, like when he was like, you know, a cool guy and a nice guy to be around. He had the best thing. That first week I was working on Becker, I was scared to death and trying too hard in everything I did. And nervous, like every time I would do a line, it's like being a guest star is very nerve wracking because you can get replaced the easiest, it seems, on the set. And so it's every time you're doing whatever you're doing, you're basically auditioning for your job again and again and again and again for the whole week. And there was a moment at the end of like the first day of rehearsing. And you know, I was like, okay, getting my stuff and getting ready to go and head out. And I'm passing Ted Danson on the way out, and I just kind of do kind of the eyebrow wave. You know, I didn't even want to go too much. So I'm going, all right, I'll see you tomorrow. And he, as I pass him, he stops and he puts his hand, and he's a very tall person, so he puts his hand down on my shoulders and he says, I'm so glad you're here.
Oh,
and that's really like one of the moments that's made, you know, I still remember it as like one of these key moments in my career, and just kind of definitely kind of made the whole week for me.
And
like,
then well, okay, he fucked you,
I guess.
You let him do it. He's Ted fucking dancing.
I just think that it's hard. Any group dynamic is hard to come in when you're the new guy and existing,
right.
And you must have had that on Lost. The two Keely Sanchez and the other who came in, and I feel bad. I think what was that, like season four maybe, where all of a sudden they were just there and it was sort of written like, oh, these survivors were here the whole time,
right? And we reshoot things, put them in old scenes.
And as a fan, I think I kind of felt like, you don't get to go up and call him Hurley. You don't know who he is, you know. Like as a fan, I was like, who the fuck are these people?
They called him the Get Losties.
But that was, I think. Part of it was also like there was a whole faction of fans going like, when are we going to learn about the other people who were also in that group? Because like, you know, it's just, it's like we would always joke when we're sitting around a fire and doing our scenes, like going over there, that fire, those people got their own show.
And it's a comedy.
And they talk about stuff happening. Yeah.
There was a nod to that once where it was, I forget who it was, but like the guy was like, so you guys are always going off and having your own adventure. Yeah,
he's Danny Roebuck. Yeah.
Like just like
Dr. Arts when he's having that scene with me. Yeah. That was a hard scene to sit to like not laugh during. It was him saying, you know, says, how come they get the good pieces of wreckage?
Yeah, because there's all those scenes, you know, there's all those, especially like those flashback scenes where it's just like shit's falling from the sky and you see all these people scattering. You're like, who the fuck is that? Where did that guy ever go?
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and it's great because you had a lot of the same people the whole time. And
yeah.
And every now and then there'll be someone new and be like, oh, wait a minute.
But I think that's one of the things that I came to love about the show was that you never knew anyone there could potentially become a rabbit hole that ultimately like, oh, you really.
Well, there was a period of time there's that hypochondriac in like season one, like right about the same episode with the golf. There's the guy who kept going up to Jack. He was a guy who wore glasses. He did like two episodes.
Yeah.
And I forgot what his character's name. Not everybody on the internet's going crazy.
It was several years ago.
And it was that same kind of thing. And so then that might have been like a buffer guy. So when they introduced Ethan, that you go, oh, he's just another one of these guys that they're going to introduce. And then later you find out he's another and the whole thing explodes. Spoiler alert.
It is.
I'm still getting people telling me, says, hey, I just started watching Lost.
Oh, spoiler alert.
So weird.
Spoiler alert from 9 years ago. Really? Were you happy with the, or did you feel pretty comfortable about the, because I feel like every season sort of had a theme.
Yeah.
You know, like, what, like one season was all, felt to me, was all about this weird corporate conspiracy and the Hanzo Corporation. And then you'd go online and see all these weird, like, alternate reality kind of gaming videos, like, oh, I found a clue and a commercial. And then another.
A fake in search of.
A fake in search of, yeah. And then another another year was about all about science. And then another year was all about spirituality. I mean, did you kind of. Were you sort of happy with the path the show took and the way it wrapped up?
I like that how every season the show had a certain level of reinvention where it's like this first season is just about survival and just kind of making it through. And the next one, you know, was like the story of, you know, the other part of the plane and us kind of coming together. And it's just kind of like, oh, and then what's the next one going to be in store? I like the way it all worked out. A lot of people still kind of sore about the ending. Kind of interesting to still come out. And they're always like, they're always leading the witness. They're always like saying like, so what'd you think about how it ended?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm like, well, I don't know. I ended up with the island at the end. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think it went pretty nicely.
Your storyline was probably the most satisfying end, I think, to the, out of all the characters.
I just think that, a series like that where they built up, and Damon's been on the podcast a few times, and I love that guy. And I think, you know, so many of the things that they were setting up in the series, it was just impossible to wrap up every single thing that had been, you know, that had been set up in previous seasons because the show was so dense and complex.
Yeah, and you have no idea what are the things that people are going to latch onto in that show. Like, I don't think they had any idea that the numbers were going to take on such a life of their own afterward.
Right.
So then it started becoming a thing that's, all right, let's put it on the soccer jerseys. You know, it started to become a thing. Where else can we put these numbers? You know, it kind of just, you know, becomes like a wink you want to do with your audience, but then they put so much value into it that it's like going, oh, now there's not going to be any way we're going to be able to pay this off with any satisfaction because it's way too significant now to be anything. In fact, I was just last weekend at this fundraising event, and a woman kept coming up to me and was telling me about the ending of Lost and being like saying, you know, it's like, but they never explained the numbers. It's just, no, they did. You know, the numbers represented, you know, the numbers in this cave that represented people, and that was kind of this whole, like, yeah, but then they never explained, you know, well, they kind of did, you know, if you were watching, you know, you would see, like, the food drops. Well, they kind of did this little addendum piece, and the...
I mean, stuff like that happens all the time, if it, like... You know, in Temple of Doom, they went to Club Obi-Wan. Like, oh, that's a fun reference for people who will get it and who are really paying attention. But, you know, if anyone... So in a weird sort of way with the numbers, it sort of feels like, wow, the audience kind of starts writing the story at that point.
Yeah.
Because they start expecting it to be a thing. And then
Right, and they start seeing things in places. And and the idea of, like, you know, oh, let's put a Dharma symbol on that shark. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that comes from Brian Burke sitting in there going like, oh, man, how the hell do I make this shark look real? And they go, let's throw a Dharma symbol on it. You know, then you'll forget about, oh, that's a fake looking shark. They're just being like, holy cow, did you see that shark?
I think I approach it. I mean, I approach a lot on that show as sort of like a comedy writer in the sense, like, hey, it'd be really funny just to have a polar bear on the island and then never explain it. Yeah. And then all of a sudden people are like, you better fucking explain that polar bear. You're like, oh, shit, I have to explain that?
Yeah.
I just thought it'd be cool. I just thought this thing would be cool. Why do we have to, you know, it's funny. I think people are divided on what they want explained and what they don't want explained. And I think, you know, Damon, they tried to use... you know, he sort of used the force. I'm like, do you have to know exactly what every, you know, people, right. some people right. got up in arms when they explained the midichlorians. And it's like, well, you know, half of the people would have been like, what? I really want to know what that is. But the other half are like, no, I want it to be mystical.
Yeah. Or like that Men in Black origin story. And that was a big dividing kind of episode as well. And it's like, okay. And they're like, yeah, but what happened before then? You know?
Yeah.
You know, what? Who built that other statue, or, you know, all those other things?
Well, that's why yeah. Will Smith goes back in time.
Yeah. No. That's one. Men in Black 3.
Right, yeah.
He's talking about Titus Welber. Origin
of but that's coming up a lot right now, especially with everyone going crazy for Prometheus.
Right.
It's like, but who are those? Who are the architects? And why did they? And where did they? And I'm like, well, it's just kind of neat. They're there, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
Everyone wants everything. You know, they want it tied together, but then they don't want too many answers.
Damon just can't get a break.
Yeah. I just like feel bad.
Get off the guy's dick already.
Everyone keeps on bringing the Lost up. It's like the same thing. I was like, no, but it's fun. Like, I had a blast watching Prometheus.
You know, you fucking write Star Trek or Lost or Prometheus.
Yeah.
They fucking come back to me. You know, like it. I think he does a great job. And I think it's fun. And there are certain pieces that, you know, I don't know. I don't think that everything necessarily has to be explained, but I did really, you know, I do remember getting super interested in the show when it was all about science and physics and Faraday and Faraday's mother and, you know, magnetic points and that sort of shit.
It definitely became a show that, you know, that would make you go to Wikipedia or like you see like a book show up on the show. You're going, ooh, and it would definitely kind of create a more fulfilling experience of watching the show if you wanted it,
yeah.
You know, that you could go after it and do the extracurricular stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is that I think one of the biggest feats for that show was that for a show that was that popular and mainstream, it was very, you really had to pay attention to follow it. And most really big shows, you don't really have to pay attention to that. Like, people as a whole don't love having to pay too close of attention to stuff that they're watching.
Yeah. And we were definitely going to show that people watched more than once. And that show is really the whole reason that I found out that podcasting existed, too, just because there was a whole bunch of stuff that was about the show that was out there on the internet. And it kind of made it – what I liked about podcasts – on the show that I would listen to was it became a way to get what the forums are saying in a nice little audible sound capsule that I can listen to on the drive time to work. And I can be like, you know, they're onto us. They're onto us with all the tarps. We got too many tarps. We got to talk about some shipment of tarps that was in that plane that crashed.
Did you have that kind of relationship with the writers where you would sort of come in and go, hey, I think this is happening, or can I suggest this, or did they pretty much?
Well, it was kind of, because we shot in Hawaii and it was written in Burbank. So it was kind of like the communication that I had with the writers was more based on what I did with what they gave me. And mm-hmm. sometimes they'd be like going, oh, that was really great. We're going to write a lot more tragedy for you now, you know, and stuff like that. But I would talk to like Jack Bender, who was in Oahu and basically gave the show the look that it had, was, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I talk about. Like, I was perhaps the most vigilant on set for that kind of continuity stuff, where I'd sit and I was going, when we'd go to what was called Boone Hill, was our little graveyard section, and I was like going, wait a minute. We have we need another mound here. And we kind of like going through, no, because that's where Boone is. And like, that's where Shannon is. And they go, no, the girl that drowned. We need the girl that drowned. And, you know, and it's kind of like each one has to have, you know, a certain amount of growth on it. You know, some have to look fresher than others. And kind of like, that was kind of, every now and then I try and catch us before. I was like, come on. If we don't fix this now, the internet's going to go ablaze with it.
You guys, come on. They talk about everything. They know every grain of sand.
Yeah.
I feel do you like time travel as the sort of foundation of a plot line? Do you enjoy that, or do you just feel like, oh, it's so messy cuz the continuity's so hard?
I like the complication of time travel. Like I kind of got into it because of the show, but since then, and having like kind of looked at like, you know, this book on like introduction to time and just how time is such this weird ethereal concept that you can just play with forever. It really, you know, became something that was kind of fun to do. That's one of my favorite scenes to ever do, was the whole thing between the scene between Hurley and Miles talking about time travel and who can die and who can't die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you like the idea that there are like fixed points in time? Or do you think like, oh, it's all, you know, if you went back, you could change anything and it's not really going to matter.
I like that whole idea of like, you know, but if you change something, then it branches into a different timeline.
Right.
Alternate 1985.
The alternate 1985, yeah. Where he flips up the chalkboard and he's like, and we went back here and then this. But then there's so many. But when you start creating alternate timelines, it's like, oh, well, was that always supposed to happen? Or if you went back before that alternate timeline was created, could you stop the alternate timeline? But then would that create an alternate timeline? I feel like if you think about it too much, you're not, I feel like we're not supposed to think about it too much.
That's what's crazy about watching the movie Time Crimes, is that like, you're like, is he doing this stuff because he's
Chronocriminis.
Yes, Chronocriminis.
Fucking great. Have you seen Time Crimes?
No.
It's a Spanish time travel movie.
Gross.
But it's not super sci-fi time travel. It's just a function of the plot, and it's fucking great.
Yeah, cool. It gets to a point where you're like, it's like, you know, it almost too brain melty.
Same with Primer. Yeah.
Primer, I thought it was way too brain melty for me.
Did you see Primer?
No.
That was another, it was like an indie film, and their time machine was basically like a tarp, where a guy kind of goes into this tarp in a storage unit and then comes out and he's gone back in time.
But you have to have it turned on for a certain amount
of time. The movie makes sense, and halfway through you start going, what's going on? In any review that I read about that movie, I was like, I have to have someone explain this to me. They would always get to about act three and then go, and then I don't really know how this works here.
Yeah, all of a sudden you're just like, it gets like exciting, but you don't know why, and it's just confusing.
Cool. Like I was always a fan, like that when that show Journeyman was on.
Yeah.
And just the whole idea of like, you know, because it took away that, ooh, time travel, cool. It was like, man, time traveling ruins your life. It's so hard to maintain. It's like the same thing that Time Traveler's Wife movie is like.
Yeah.
It's so hard to have a relationship with anybody when you're traveling through time all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's a moment in Journeyman where he's got his kid, he's in the public place, and suddenly he knows he's about to jump, and he's gonna like, and like there's no one here to take his kid.
Yeah.
And just like going and just the, you know, it's like, yeah, it's careful what you wish for.
what did you learn from reading the Introduction to Time book that was there anything in there where you're like, holy shit, I guess that's true. I never thought about that.
Well, it's that whole idea of like time is something that you think you understand until someone asks you to explain it kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's that kind of like how there's no like measuring time. Like I can see the numbers move on that clock right now, but you know, those numbers are just relative to some other thing. It doesn't necessarily mean anything. Those are just numbers moving. And we just kind of all agreed that we're going to measure time with stuff like these numbers that move.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff that just kind of sit there. And it's one of these kind of books that you just kind of like, it's done with like pictures and
sound.
And,
I like
and
I know that
and
series.
Word
it's,
bubbles.
It's real. I know that all those, series. Yeah.
All those. Like I also have like the relativity one, I think. And it's just kind of like, it's good. It's like, read this cartoon and then put the book down and walk away for a little while. Because it's like the same thing when you can kind of read like those like Dr. Quanta's Book of Facts thing. It's like going, ooh, that's a heady little bit. that what the bleep do we know?
Yeah.
You should only watch it like 15-minute increments and then walk away.
And your nose starts
and just,
bleeding.
Just let that little bit work on that little bit because, you know, the next one's just going to overcomplicate things. And you'll be like, you know, so, oh, now I got to back it up again.
Yeah, because time does seem to have a physical property, but not in. So when you think about, okay, the three-dimensional universe. Well, here's this, right. And then I'm pointing my hand this way, so that must be the third dimension. But then there's this fourth dimension, and it's time, so it has an effect on the physical, and then it has an effect on space, and I don't know what, this hurts.
Right,
this
and then really you walk hurts. Away, and then like 6 months later, you go, oh, let's look at that book again.
Do you think it's important to understand, do you think in this case it's important to understand exactly what it is, much in the same of like explaining a show like The Mechanisms of Lost? Or do you think there are parts of the concept of time that we should just go, it is what it is, and let's just leave it at that.
Is it important for everybody to understand? No. It's only the people who, you know, that's, you know, if that gets the rocks off, yeah, look at it. You know, check it out and get ethereal about it. Something like you said, you studied philosophy. It's like, that's a lot of sitting. I took one philosophy class, and it was like the teacher would come in, always seemingly lost in thought, and where the lecture began, I wasn't quite sure. And so I'd leave that class with a blank page going, well, it wasn't blank, it was just drawings and stuff. But it was like, it was like, I have no idea how I'm going to get any, I'm going to take this pass fail because I have no idea what I'm doing in this place. And like he would sit and then suddenly something would set him off on some weird tangent about how like, he wrote a thesis on Blade Runner, and I was like going, okay, now this I can talk about for a little bit. But then, yeah, I had no idea. I don't even remember what the name of that class was, but I just remember watching this teacher walk in with his hands in his pockets, looking at the ground, and then suddenly he goes, okay, so, and I was like, is he picking up where he left off yesterday? Or is he having a conversation with someone who's not there right now?
I think a lot of those guys, you know, a lot of them were very difficult to talk to one-on-one because I think, you know, when you're so entrenched in something like philosophy or even like theoretical physics, or I think you just spend so much fucking time in your own head trying to sort stuff out that you just, it's probably difficult to exist in the external world.
Yeah, it always sounds cool. Like you always hear like those stories of like, you know, a final exam and it'd be like, what is bravery? And some guy writes this is in a blue book and turns it in and gets an A.
Yeah.
Which, you know, all those classic college blue book stories, like the guy who the test ends and he keeps working and he keeps doing his thing and he ends up filling it, and later in like in office hours he goes to the teacher, says, hey, I'm here to turn in my test, and the teacher says, no, that test ended 3 hours ago. You can't turn that test in. And the student's like, do you know who I am? And the teacher goes, no, that's what I thought. And he just shoves it in the pile of blue books.
I heard the same story, except that he smashes them on the ground and runs out. Yeah. Or the other one where the two students miss a final. And they weren't supposed to get a makeup test, and they convinced the professor, like, we had a flat tire, we were coming back from this trip, and there was literally nothing we could do. And the professor's like, all right, show up on Tuesday, I'll give you a makeup test. And there's three, you know, the first question of the test, and they answer it, and the second question of the test, and then the third question of the test, which makes up 90% of their grade. It says, the question is, which tire? The that's old great. Blue book urban legends.
That's the Game of Thrones. That you both, you tell me your name. Tell me your name.
So you like, I think a philosophy of Blade Runner would be a rad class.
I think it would be probably. That was not my class though. I even forgot what class that was called.
You seem to like a lot of sci-fi stuff. And Matt Myra met you at E3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you just go just to hang out and play games, or did someone
force him to be there?
It was forced me. No, it was like this this little charity thing for the Red Rush Games. So I was like, yeah, okay. And then they said, you know, they said that someone was going to come from G4 to maybe do like a bumper recording. And they said his name was Matt, and I was going, ooh, could it be?
Have you watched G4?
I did. I mean, I haven't watched it much.
He has DirecTV.
In a while.
Oh, he has DirecTV, yeah.
I would watch a lot and just kind of. I haven't been in front of. I haven't really played much video games in a while either. So, being up to date on that stuff hasn't really been.
We played Forza Racing on this giant, like, 150-inch screen, and just decided to find straightaways and drive at each other from opposite ends of the track.
We wanted to see how many head-on collisions we could do.
Whoever had the least paint on won.
That was the goal.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was fun.
So what else are you... what else is there anything you want to promote or talk about? Or
I really don't have anything to plug.
We just wanted you to come on. We just wanted you to come on because
that's kind of part of the thing. Was like, going, do I go? I really don't have anything.
You don't have to plug anything. I just want to give people the opportunity if there's anything you want people to know about.
I just did an episode of Californication.
Did David Duchovny fuck you?
Did not.
Oh.
But
no, what's the point then?
But it was cool because Maggie Grace was also in the scene.
Oh yeah,
too.
Of course.
And so like her and Evan Handler was kind of like a little reunion. It was kind of cool because Evan came out to do Lost when do that episode Dave, and so kind of get to go back and kind of be on his show. We kind of made it kind of a nice little full circle moment.
Circle I was like, and then you run into other actors, and then you guys touch for a second. And you're like, I remember we were on an island.
There was that time.
There was that time we were all together.
I just remembered I saw you sing with Weezer at the was it the Blue Album show or the Pinkerton show? I think it was the Blue Album show. It was at Universal.
Yeah, I mean,
did you do both?
I think I did both. Yeah, I was there for both nights.
Yeah, yeah, that was exciting.
That was really crazy. That was, I mean, first of all. That was a rough summer. That was a summer that Lost ended. I moved away from Hawaii. My dog passed away. And then 2 months later, my dad passed away.
Oh, Jesus.
But then out of that, like the day my dad passed away, I found that I was going to be the cover of the Weezer album. So I was like going, wow, suddenly this ray of sunshine has shone down on me. Because
yeah.
He sent me like a mock-up of that
it's
picture.
So great. It's just him.
And just then, the face.
And then going, I introduced them and sang with them at this, they did this this Axe Live event at a hotel up on, like a motel up on the Dunes
Inn.
Oh
yeah, I remember I was driving by that.
Yeah, at the Dunes Inn. And as I was driving in, they had this giant banner of my head of the album cover on the side of the wall there. And then going up there and just kind of sitting there and I'm on stage and singing with Weezer and I'm looking over to my left and I'm saying, all right, there's Weezer and I'm singing with them and this is my real life.
Yeah. It
was really kind of a cool moment. And then to go up and then sing the song with them at what is it called now? The Universal Amphitheater?
Gibson Amphitheater.
Right.
Yeah.
So I singing, and they kept the banner up behind me. So I'm like, I'm singing it in front of my giant head at that place. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It was definitely one of those kind of things that I was like, going, I could not have imagined this. As like this is something I'd get to do in my career.
You seemed like overwhelmed and very happy when you were on stage.
It's fun. I mean, it was really fun that summer of love with Weezer thing.
Yeah. Well, but also as an actor, I think acting is a very kind of isolating profession. It's like you said, you guys are out. You know, you're just on an you're in the jungle working with like a handful of other people, or you're doing scenes and it's just you in a room with the camera. And then the polar opposite of that is like, hey, fucking rock stars, where they just connect with 12,000 people at once, and you just feel the.
And it was cool. There's a lot of musicians that was great because Lost was a great show to watch on DVD. That. A lot of people who were in bands were coming out to me because we were the kind of show that you could take on a tour bus and kind of watch in big chunks of time.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of like having like Seal come up to you and ask if he could get a picture with you. It was kind of,
whoa.
Like, wow, you're Seal.
I interviewed him once in the 90s, and he was fucking cool.
Fixed his computer a number of times, and he was not cool.
Really?
Yeah. Very weirdly demanding of things that weren't really possible.
You know, it's funny. You really start to see what people are like if they're just hanging out. Like, oh, that guy's really cool. But if something needs
wrong.
To... Yeah, if something's wrong.
Yeah. We had like the Seal would somehow had the number to the Genius Room. Like he had like a fucking bat phone.
Oh, yeah, he's Seal. I mean, what are you...
So we would all be like, Seal's on the phone, and we would fight over who had to take the call.
Jesus.
Which Apple store were you at?
Yeah, Grove.
Oh.
Yeah.
You had to, so someone actually got Seal on the phone.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then we'd have to talk him through.
So you guys have a room back there?
Yeah, there's a room
back there. That's just for you guys?
Genius room. Yep.
What goes on?
Fix things. Like not a lot.
Is it a clean room?
It's not a clean room. I mean, there's
that's
big
not elitist at all.
Anti-static room.
There's like a velvet rope in front of it. Do you have a special genius badge that gets you into the genius room?
No, you had a passcode to get in.
Ah.
And then you go in and look at
the people. You had the thing where someone had to poke your eye out, yeah, like in Demolition Man.
Just hold the, hold the eye up.
The retinal scan. Yeah.
Simon Phoenix!
Yeah, but that was, yeah, we would just do that and look at your eye photo. So be watchful of that.
Yeah, I heard that.
We will look at it.
I heard that.
Do not take pictures of your dong and put them on devices.
I have no dong pictures of mine or anybody else's. On
I
my,
bet I can find one.
Yeah, but then you put in there.
Matt,
like, I didn't say how I would find
planted
it.
Yeah.
Well,
my dick is on so many computers,
that's
you guys.
The whole thing. That's the whole thing. It's him going, look, he's got dicks on it too. That looks like the same dick.
Dot Tumblr. Yeah. That's a Tumblr
that
right there.
Been a fucking Tumblr.
It's just like dicks you found on hard drives.
I kept a lot of. I would take pictures of people's desktops when they were fucking really weird, like, and I have a bunch of them. Hard I was going to do a book one day.
Like a coffee table book. Like,
hard dicks, yeah, on hard drives.
Yeah, hard dicks on hard drives.
That's not a bad idea.
In HD.
Not as many vagina pictures, though, right? It was just a lot
no,
of dogs.
Not a lot. A lot of, like, girls, women would have a lot
that's
of
a
pictures.
Harder picture to take, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is a little
yeah,
bit.
Sure.
Well, not if you go to Gone Wild.
Yeah. Yeah.
The subreddit.
You either have to move the computer.
You'll hold. But with the like, new MacBook Airs, they're so light, you could just hold the, one, the 11-inch screen.
Yeah, that was always funny. Opening up a photo booth and looking at the photo booth roll. It was always like, you masturbating, your grandpa discovering the fun effects. More of you fucking. Jesus. It was always so fucking.
You'd have to superimpose. You'd have to superimpose like the surprised grandpa over yeah, like the fucking the Spider-Man action figure going into someone's ass.
Aunt Jenny's on a roller coaster.
Masturbating.
You're fucking.
Now I know why I never do that thing where you have to leave your computer overnight.
Yeah.
Why were you going?
It's clearly a world tour of whatever's going on in someone's computer.
Because I was bored. I was yeah, hoping for some at least fake work reason. Like, well, we have to make sure that the you know when we do speed
well,
checks
I mean,
the
when you speed, yeah, when you
if
fix,
there's a problem in photo booth, there's yeah, clearly replace, it'll affect a lot of other.
If I replace
dicks or bottleneck in the processor,
if I replace a display or a logic board, you yeah, have to make sure the EyeSight camera still works because that's connected to the display.
Right. So making sure the EyeSight camera sure works just means going through their
you
entire
gotta,
roll.
You gotta open it up.
Did anyone do like fisheye with their balls or anything crazy like that?
No, I never really saw any effects on genitals.
Oh. Now they have that roller coaster ride.
Yeah. Oh my god, I'm gonna put my dick in a roller coaster.
Whoa! Now we're
whoa,
fucking now we're fucking underwater.
Look at all these clueless fish.
Oh, I did that underwater. I did like I did kind of like the little Charlie nod where I wrote something like "Thanks for watching" on my hand and took the picture.
Oh, that's
using
awesome,
the photo booth to kind of like when the show ended.
That's right.
Oh, that's really sweet. Well, it was a delight having you here. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks. It was fun. It was fun to kind of get to hang out with you guys because yeah, I listen to you guys a lot.
Oh, you do?
He does.
Oh yeah,
that's awesome.
He pronounced my last name correctly.
Today I found myself humming in my house. Vaginal dryness.
That's our number one hit. Vaginal dryness.
That's gonna be the clip you're gonna lift. I know it.
Coming up, we got Jorge Garcia.
Vaginal dryness. It was funny enough that I was going, wait a minute, did he say, hold on, click, 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 click.
I am truly honored that you remember what I think we can all agree is Matt Myra's theme song for life.
Oh, thank you. That was a hostful, too. He's a fan.
I'm going to tell you what's going to happen is someday, I just want to make $1 billion so that I can do things like say, hey, Matt, I got you tickets to Dave Matthews' concert. And then you go, and then halfway through, he's like, this song goes out to Lou Matt Myra. Vaginal dryness. Like, I will pay $10 million to make that happen.
I think you can get him for like 110 grand.
I will do it. I just want to make a shit ton of money so I can do shit like that.
That's okay. Yeah. If it's just that happens, but I get a Dave Matthews concert, I'm totally fine with that.
Well, we could just get Brian McKnight to do it.
But he'll do it. Yeah, Brian McKnight will just do it for free.
Yeah, let me show you how your dry pussy
works. Cool. Well, then maybe hopefully come back on. Please, please come back on and hang out with us.
Sure. Thanks.
All right.
You should do a hostful with us. This didn't count.
This was a guested episode, but a hostful episode. When one of you mooks has to work or something, then Jorge can fill in as the guest.
We'll have him replace you.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, that would actually probably be a better show. I would listen to that, actually. Yeah. More than I listen to my own show. All right. Enjoy your burrito.
Wait, actually, Jorge, do you want to say it?
Enjoy your burrito.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Sweet.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.